proud to have switched from liberal to conservative over the years.
The Talk of Northern Nevada.
Speak out. 884-9910. FM News Talk.
99.1 and 92.3.
Welcome back, my friends. Welcome back. Patty Wood and I were just talking about, Patty was listening to the show, of course, and heard us talk about restaurants, and Patty Wood just had the most amazing lunch at the Wild River Grill, and they are the best, aren't they? Downtown Reno.
It was delicious.
And we're losing the good weather to sit outside at the Wild River Grill, but it's beautiful inside too. And I used to go to that place when it was the Riverside Casino to go see Zella Lair, where she was performing on stage. I'm now eating a beet salad.
Oh, that beet salad with the shrimp on the side.
Yes.
Phenomenal.
Oh, it's outstanding.
Very delicious.
Anyway, Patty Wood is a reverse mortgage specialist, and she has new news about reverse mortgages. And this is fascinating to me that you can use a reverse mortgage to buy a home. You new residents here, you can use a reverse mortgage to buy a home. And you recently were telling a group of realtors to get the word out about how this is possible. So tell us that story.
Right. Well, thank you, John, for having me once again. I always enjoy being here. And we hadn't talked about the reverse purchase in a while, so I wanted to remind...
That's what it's called, reverse
purchase. A reverse purchase, yes, where you can actually purchase a home with a reverse mortgage, never have a monthly mortgage payment. So this works, a lot of people that are either downsizing or maybe moving closer to their children, or maybe they've moved here from out of the area, they've sold their home that they were living in, and let's say you come here with $300,000. Well, we all know that you're not going to be able to buy a house for $300,000 of your liking, most people, unless you get into a condominium or a townhouse or something like that. So you can actually take that $300,000 and purchase, depending on your age, but let's say you purchase a $450,000 house, you put the $3,000 into it, that is your equity that you're putting into your new home. It's got to be your primary residence. But then once again, you do not have a monthly mortgage payment. You just pay for your taxes and insurance. And so that's, that's really good for the people that are purchasing. It's really good for realtors out there when they have more of a selection to find the perfect home for their buyer. And it's a really good program. What you need to understand is a little bit, it's kind of the same as a reverse mortgage, a little bit, but instead of when you do a reverse mortgage, it's on your primary residence and you're taking some of the equity out that you have already put in there. And when you do a reverse purchase, you're taking new equity and putting it into your new property. So that's pretty much how it works. And it's just been such a great tool for, people locating, relocating into this area because our home prices, as everybody knows.
I hear it all the time. Oh, I wish I could buy a home. People are leaving Reno because of, they can't afford the home with what they have in the bank for a down payment. And so how did the realtors react when you were telling them about this reverse purchase option?
Well, of course, they're all excited.
Yeah, it's another way.
It is another way. And maybe even somebody, let's say you lose your spouse, and so now you want to move closer to your children, but maybe you've lived in this house for 20 years and you have built up a lot of equity. So they sell that home and they take the money that they have left over and they can go purchase another home. It could be a single family home. Maybe you get a duplex. Maybe you get a duplex and you can live in one of the sides of the duplex and rent out the other. Or maybe you have children or grandchildren that they can live in the other one. So it's single family homes, duplex, fourplex, a manufactured home as long as it's on permanent foundation. There's all kinds of good things about the reverse purchase that people don't know. I mean, they don't know that they can take some of their proceeds. Let's say they come here with $500,000. If you came here with $500,000,
you're talking to a California person now.
Well, or from some other area, but yes, somebody from Texas, whatever, whoever moves here, they could, you know, let's say they had $500,000 and they found $650,000 house, and so they would put $400,000 in there, and they'd have an extra $100,000 to live on, you know, to put in their bank or investment or whatever. It's just a really good tool for, especially for realtors that are struggling finding the perfect house for a lesser amount of money. If these people do a reverse purchase, they can find a nice house in a little bit, you know, higher price range.
Who basically qualifies for reverse purchase? Are there limitations to this?
No, it's the same rules as a reverse mortgage. At least one of the borrowers has to be 62.
Okay.
So 62 or older, they can do a reverse purchase. And then they never have a monthly mortgage payment. That is the greatest thing, because a lot of people that come here with all cash thinking, I don't want to have a mortgage payment. I'm, you know, maybe they've retired. Maybe they're in their 70s. And they say, you know what? I don't want to have a mortgage payment. I've been there, done that. And so they take a lesser amount and buy a more expensive home and still not have a monthly mortgage payment. So as everybody knows, if you pay all cash for a house, you're still going to have to pay your taxes and insurance. So it's no different with the reverse mortgage. You're going to have to pay your taxes and insurance. And if you have an HOA, then you've got to pay that as well.
But that's huge. There's never a monthly mortgage payment. And you can stay in the home for the rest of your days, and you can sell the home at any time and pay back the reverse mortgage balance due of what you took out, plus interest.
That's true. And one more point on that. I've had some, clients lately, and maybe they're only 62 or 63 or 68, whatever, and maybe they're still working or they have a little side job or something. You can always pay into your reverse mortgage. You can pay down some of the interest. If you're worried about what's going to be left for your children or 62 and you are hoping that you're going to live another 20 years, that's the good thing. If you have the funds and you want to pay the interest down, you can, but you're not obligated to. That's the greatest thing. So let's say 6 months out of the year, you want to throw a little bit of your money at the interest, so you keep your loan balance down, you can do that. And then, the other 6 months, so every other month, if you wanted to pay the interest, you can, but you don't have to. So that's the nice thing about the reverse purchase.
And folks, if you want to do this, here's more good news. Interest rates. Everybody is saying we're on the cusp of lower interest rates. How are those interest rates affecting reverse purchases and reverse mortgages?
Well, they've affected them a little bit, because when the interest rate, the reverse mortgage is based on your age, the interest rate, and the value of your home, the appraised value of the home. So when interest rates are higher, there's a principal limit, which is what the bank, the lender is going to lend you. When the interest rates are higher, they're going to lend you less money. So when the interest rates are lower, then you get, more money. So and if you're doing a purchase, it's less money that you have to bring to the table. If you're doing a reverse mortgage, it's more money that you get to pull out in equity. But the beauty of having the reverse mortgage versus if you were in a conventional loan and you had an adjustable rate, when interest rates go up, you're going to have to pay a higher payment. In the reverse mortgage, because you're not making a payment, it's not going to affect you immediately. Yes, in the long run, it's going to determine how much equity you're still going to have in your property. But that's why they've really tightened up as far as how much they're going to lend you, because they want you to be able to stay in your home and have equity to do whatever, for your heirs or your estate to deal with at the end of your days.
And when the interest rates go down, like they say they're about to do, and they have to some degree, more people then qualify.
Correct.
Now, how does that work? Why do more people qualify when the interest rate goes down?
Well, because when the interest rate goes down, the principal limit goes up. So the interest rate is what controls the principal limit. And so the principal limit is the amount that they allow you to take out. For instance, this is another thing, is that if you've lived in your house for 15, 20 years. And even if you have a mortgage on your house currently, but you have a lot of equity in your house, you can do a reverse mortgage, pay off that mortgage that you're making payments on, and now have a reverse mortgage and be able to live there for the rest of your life.
All right, folks, have any questions? Our phone number is 884-9910. That's 775-884-9910. Patty rarely comes on the show, but she's here now. So if you have a question about a reverse purchase or a reverse mortgage, like what's the catch? We invite you to call. Right now, we're going to take a break. I'm John Potter, live and local with Patty Wood, reverse mortgage specialist on 99.1, 92.3 FM Talk. FM News Talk time, 1016.
FM Talk on 92.3 FM in Smith and Mason Valley. 99.1 FM Talk for Reno, Tahoe, and all of northern Nevada.
Welcome back, my friends. Welcome back. John Potter, live and local every Saturday, 9 to noon. Guest for one more segment right now, Patty Wood, reverse mortgage specialist. Text question, how much equity do you have to be able to do a reverse mortgage? How much equity do people have to have?
Well, again, it depends on your age, but if you are 62 years young, I always say, then you're going to have between 65 and 68% equity in your property. Again, it depends on the interest rate and the value of your home.
Did you break the microphone again?
I did.
I told you not to touch it.
I know. I pulled it off of the
I'm sorry
the thing
to interrupt.
That's okay. I'm good at this, John.
Me too. I break things all the time.
Oh, goodness. All right. Anyway, so, and then, you know, the older you are, because the less life expectancy you have is you only have to have a little bit, you know, more or less equity in the property. And then when you get to be about 75, 80 years old, and you've got to have about 50% equity in your property. So you've got to have a substantial amount because, like I said before, they want to make sure that this is going to last you. And especially if you want to pull out some cash, they want to make sure that it's going to help you for the rest of your days.
All right. Second question. Is it true that you don't have to pay taxes on the amount of money that you take out in equity?
Absolutely. 100%.
This is like the fourth time I personally have asked you this question because I want to be absolutely sure.
Yes.
That you really don't have to pay taxes on the amount of money you get from a reverse mortgage.
No, because this is equity.
How do the IRS overlook that?
Because you've already paid taxes on it. This is your equity.
That doesn't stop the IRS, believe me.
Well, I know that, but somehow somehow we've managed to do this all these years.
Right. Well, listen, I pay taxes on Social Security. So that's money that's been taxed previously. Anyway, you don't have to pay taxes on the amount of money you take out in equity on your reverse mortgage.
Right.
Okay. No catch there.
No catch there. Not at all.
It's just not considered taxable income.
It's not taxable income. And whether you take it, monthly or you take it in a line of credit, and you have it sitting in, you know, the line of credit, which your line of credit's going to grow, by the way. We don't call it interest because then you would have to pay taxes on interest. But this is money that will you will have access to certain amount the first year, certain amount the second year, and thereafter.
What about, I'm full of whatabouts today, folks. What about, can you keep your property in a trust, because that's what Kathy and I have. Can you keep your property in a trust if you get a reverse mortgage?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, I encourage people, if they don't have a living trust, to get a living trust. And even even if they don't get it before, because, and especially people that are concerned about leaving their home to their heirs or their estate, you need to know. Yes, it'll go to your children if that's what your wishes are, but if you have a living trust, it doesn't have to go through probate. Probate can be very costly and very time-consuming. So if your parents, let's say, pass away and they've left you the house, guess what? The interest does not stop adding to the balance until it's paid off. So if you have to go through probate for the next 6 to 12 months because it's not in a trust or there's no kind of will or death deed upon death or anything like that, then it's more interest that gets tacked onto the property.
So we're talking about people who are 62 years and older, and medical issues come up. What happens if a person becomes ill and they need to go into a nursing facility?
Well,
what about their home? Do they owe anything? What?
Yes. So once it's no longer your primary resident is when you either have to decide to sell it, or if you have a family member that wants to purchase it, they would have to refinance it and pay off the reverse mortgage. But if you fell and hurt yourself or had hip surgery or whatever reason and you had to go into a rehab, you're allowed to be away from your property for a full year before they say, okay, chances are you're not going to come back to your home, so you probably need to sell your home. Now, if you had gone through physical therapy and you're back walking again or using your arms or whatever, and you're doing really good, and it's going to extend 2 more months after the 12 months, the lender, if we can show proof from a doctor that you're on the right track, then they will allow you to stay in the home.
All right, let's go to the phone. Sorry for the wait, folks. Let's go to Richard calling from Lake Tahoe. He's asking about reverse interest. Hey, Richard, I'm glad you called. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. This is a very interesting topic. But let me pose a situation. You sell the house. You have proceeds of X. You got to pay tax on X. Why do I not have to pay taxes, or when do the taxes become due on that X in a reverse mortgage?
Okay, so if you have a reverse mortgage, I'm trying to understand this. So if you have a reverse mortgage on the property and you sell the property and you give half
no.
to your spouse?
Oh, no,
okay.
That's not the question.
Okay.
If I'm in a reverse mortgage, I'm receiving money every month from the bank. Is that correct?
Correct.
So why is that money not taxable?
Because it is the money that you're getting is equity that you're using that you've already paid taxes on.
Yes, and you explained that earlier. That's money you've already
right. That's been your
through,
equity.
Yeah.
That's your equity. So you don't have to pay taxes on it. You're not making interest on the money that you're getting, unless you pull it out and put it in something else, but you don't have to pay taxes on it.
It is equity you've already paid taxes on, absolutely. You say here, though, that the flip side is also because you are not paying monthly payments. There is no income tax benefit unless you did decide to pay the interest down at some point.
Correct, and that's the flip side to that. If you wanted to pay the interest down, because there's no tax benefit either. So if you're thinking, of paying the interest down, then that would be tax deductible for the interest that you've paid back on the reverse mortgage.
Okay.
Does that make
hey,
sense?
John.
Yes, sir.
I'm sorry to interrupt you two, but we had a caller from Michael from Reno who I accidentally hung up on. He was asking about what happens to your reverse mortgage after you pass.
Okay, well, that's a good question, and I'll cover that again. But once you pass away, then you have already delegated who's going to be in charge of your home once you pass away. Hopefully, I'm going to help you do that at the beginning of the loan. And there's got to be somebody that's in charge of your estate once you pass away. So when you pass away, they can do one of two things. If this is a home that they love and they want to keep the home, then they simply have to refinance the reverse mortgage and pay off the reverse mortgage, and then they can have the house. Or they can sell the house, and whatever equity is left in the property, it goes to your heirs or your estate.
All right, Patty, every time you're here, I learn something new, and it's all good news about reverse mortgages. And, you know, folks, Patty, this is her life's work. She goes to your house, brings papers. She does the study on the value of your house in your neighborhood, and goes over the paperwork with you wherever you want to meet. And after you get the reverse mortgage, you don't disappear. You help people out with it, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely.
As such a helper you are. So final minute, give all your contact information.
Okay. So you can reach me at 775-954-0366. 954-0366. Or you can email me at patricia.wood@apmortgage.com.
All right. That's awesome. And do you have a website or something where people can learn more? You still don't have a website?
I do have a website.
Oh, okay. Well,
but it's really long, and so I don't always remember it, John. But yeah. if you will go to apmortgage.com and you want to look, and then it'll say put in the agent you're looking for.
What if you just
Patricia
listen?
Wood.
I think this is how I found you. Just go to Google and
Patricia Wood.
Patricia Wood reverse mortgage, and there it is. Okay.
Yes.
Awesome.
Thank you.
It was great seeing you again. Okay, up next, folks, we're going to be talking about question three, ranked choice voting. What do you think? Well, we have some people who say vote no, and we invite the people who disagree and say vote yes. We invite you to call in to talk to these folks and let the voters out there who are voting right now. Early voting opened up a half hour ago in Washoe County in Nevada. First day of early voting, in-person voting. So very important topic. Question three. We'll get into it, hopefully with you on the phone, too. Next, I'm John Potter, live and local Saturdays on 99.1, 92.3 FM Talk, FM News Talk Time, 10:30.
This is where Nevada comes to hear and talk about the news.
It scares me. It really scares me.
99.1 FM Talk.
And 92.3 News Talk Truth.
Welcome back, friends. Welcome back, John Potter, live and local. Hello, Barbara Fleming.
Hello, John.
Hello, Joe Macalini.
Nice to meet you, John.
We were, I was trying to get the name right. I will mess it up, I'm sure. Can I call you Joe?
Yeah, call me Joe.
Call you Joe.
Call me Joe.
You are trying to stop question three from winning approval again from voters. It passed by voters in 2022. The vote back then, Nevadans voted 53% yes on question three, 47% no. And now it's up for its final vote to become law. Question three would abolish all closed Republican and Democrat primaries. We would have a single primary election, not Republican or Democrat, a single open primary for all. So far, is that correct?
Yeah, and in California, it's called a jungle primary.
A jungle primary? But why? Because there are so many names in it?
So many people can run for any office. When they have to come from a party, the parties vet the candidates, and so you have a select number of people. But when anyone can just apply for a race, there can be an indefinite number. There can be 10, 15, 20 people running for the same office.
That's bad?
Yes. How do you know what they stand for?
Well, by then, like any other primary, you already have one person in mind that you want to vote for.
Not
right?
necessarily.
Really? Okay.
I mean, you might know that somebody's name. You
right.
might recognize somebody's name. But with a party system, the party vets the candidates first. And if the candidate is vetted by the party, then you know that they're going to align with the beliefs of that party. And if you have certain beliefs and you know that your beliefs align with the party or with that candidate, it makes it much easier to decide who you want to vote for. But if you've got a cattle call of more than 5 or 10 or 15 people, how do you winnow that down?
Well, you just find the one name that you know that you want to vote for, right?
If you're lucky, that's what I would
okay.
say.
Okay, all right. When you say that the candidate should align to the party, The people who are for this question three will say, well, we want, we should be able to vote for candidates who align with the thoughts of the people, not so much the party. You end up with candidates who are more responsive to the will of the people as opposed to the will of the party. Now, that's what I, what do you say to that?
That's the argument they make, but it, I would say it's a false argument. For one thing, up in Alaska, one of the other arguments that kind of goes along with that is that because more people can participate, you might say, even if they're not members of a party, they claim that it will increase the participation in the voting. The fact is the number of people that voted actually dropped in Alaska down to around 16%. And that's miserable if you think about it. Only 16% of the people are deciding on who's going to make our laws. I'm not happy with that.
So Alaska adopted this in 2020. And from what I hear, they're trying to rescind it now in Alaska. Maine uses ranked choice voting in statewide elections. Hawaii has used it too. And you say that Maine is trying to rescind.
I've been told Maine is trying to get rid of it.
All right.
Okay.
So continuing on, and we're trying to uncomplicate this much as possible. You see, I wrote this paragraph. I started with a paragraph to make it sound simple, and I ended up with a whole page full. So just stop me here.
I want to make a comment.
Go ahead. We just talked about the primary so far.
Right. The big point that a lot of people are not aware of, because they're trying to sell this thing with this open primary concept. But the fact is the Democratic Party in Nevada and the Republican Party in Nevada are not in favor of this bill. And it's a really serious potential damage to the state of Nevada, because if this passes this time, it becomes not a law. It becomes an amendment. It changes the constitution in the state of Nevada. That would require...
Makes it more ironclad.
It makes it more ironclad. It would take probably 10 years to get rid of it if people decided that they made a mistake. So it's really a bad thing.
Well, Joe, you mentioned, okay, besides, you mentioned the Republican and Democrat state parties are against question three. Who else is against it? The Nevada State AFL-CIO is against it. And Americans for Tax Reform are against it. Anybody else that you know of who are against question three? Oh, speak up there.
Oh, that's okay. I was going to say I have heard Planned Parenthood.
Okay.
Also.
Yeah, I'm not aware of that. But, you know, so the people that want it are out-of-state money. That's important to know. Big money donors are trying to push this onto Nevada, and the people, the local residents, do not want it.
Okay, so we capsulized the primary. It's an open primary. So at the primary, you see the full list of candidates from all parties. You, the voter, you pick your favorite. Then the top five candidates by number of votes in the primary move up to the general election. And folks, it's possible, by the way, that based on those primary votes, that all five could be in the same party.
It's possible.
In this election. And at the general election, you know, right now people vote with their party, their team. With this bill, you see on the ballot the five or less from the primary, and you rank the candidates from number one, your top choice, through number five. If no candidate gets over 50% of the votes, the candidate with the fewest votes is eliminated, and the votes cast for that candidate are redistributed based on the next preference. So the number two, the number two choice of those who voted for them gets those votes. Now, if this results in a majority, the election is over. If nobody still gets over 50%, the process repeats itself by eliminating the next bottom vote getter until somebody receives that majority. The biggest problem here to me is that to work right, voters would have to research not only the candidates they prefer, but also every candidate on the ballot, and then somehow come up with an order of preference.
That's correct. And the other thing that you didn't point out, which that was an excellent explanation, but because it is so confusing, there are a high percentage of errors. A lot of ballots get thrown out because if a voter votes for, well, if a voter doesn't rank every candidate, eventually their ballot gets thrown out. If they accidentally rank two candidates at the same rank, that eliminates their ballot as well. And I don't know the details, although somebody, I think Bob Devin mentioned yesterday that 140,000 ballots were eliminated in New York, a city in a particular race.
Well, we can all see more ballots getting tossed if people don't do this ranked choice thing right, and I can picture that happening. If I choose two candidates on election day as number one choice, the vote's invalid. If you make a mistake, like you give two candidates the same rank, your vote could be thrown out because it's an error. So we're running through the cons of question three. What are the pros? How do you folks feel about this? 884-9910 is our phone number. We're going to take a break right now. But if you disagree, you say yes on question three. We're all ears. But so far, the argument's being built against question three. It's a big no from Barbara Fleming and Joe. I'm John Potter. I'll be back in a few minutes. One more segment with no on question three on 99.1, 92.3 FM Talk, FM News Talk, time 10:45.
99.1 FM Talk.
And 92.3 FM.
This is Talk Radio. The original social media.
Hello, friends. Welcome back. Welcome back. John Potter, live and local every Saturday, 9 to noon. We have in the studio, it's Barbara and Joe. They are trying to stop question three from winning your vote for a second time. And if it does, then it goes in the Constitution. We got calls here. This is Paul from Reno, who says ranked choice voting, question three, is half good. Hey, Paul. Good morning. I'm glad you called. Go ahead.
Good morning, John. So I like ranked choice voting for the general because it does things like it makes a third party more viable. Like in this election, John F. Kennedy was still in the race. Okay, and somebody wanted to vote for him, but thought, well, he has no chance, so I'm going to vote for the Republican or the Democrat because he has no chance. This lets them vote for the underdog, and if he doesn't get enough votes, then their vote will go to the other candidate that they thought, you know, say they're a Republican, they'd normally vote that way, but they want to see this guy get a chance. They could vote for him, but if he didn't make it, their vote would then go for the Republican. So I think it's fine in that case. And it is a little bit of an issue with the, you know, you have to rank them all, but that could be done on the electronic ballot by just not letting you pick the same rank for two people, you know, but I don't like it for the primary. For the primary, it's got problems. What happens in that case is sometimes you get the other party coming in, voting for the weaker candidate on one side.
Yes, yes. Some other states, they sabotage the other party by, I'm going to change what they're doing now in some states. They change their party affiliation to, say, Democrat, and they do this in order so they can go to the Democrat primary and sabotage and vote in the least popular Democrat so that in the general election that person loses. I understand what you're saying.
Correct.
There.
And that's a bigger issue in Nevada with Republicans because the Democratic Party is not Democratic. They pick their candidate. All the support goes behind their candidate. When it gets to the primary, that candidate's going to get 90% of the vote no matter what. So it allows more people to register the other way and screw up the Republican Party, because the Republican Party typically gets a lot of good candidates and nobody wins by as big a landslide. So it's a bigger detriment to the Republicans in that respect.
Paul.
That's the problem. Thank you.
All right, sir. Well said. Thank you very much for calling. Okay, Joe, Barbara, what do you say about what Joe said?
Paul said,
yes. What do you say in response?
Well, I think we've covered that already. It presents the possibility of so many candidates who can apply to run for a race, and it's very difficult to vet those candidates. And for me, I mean, I'm really involved in politics. I spend a lot of time trying to learn what people stand for, and it's difficult
even for me, there are times when I have to consult other friends and say, what do you think about this candidate? And the thing is, try to go online and find out what they really stand for. It's not easy.
And when people do that, they stumble across some slanted, biased website who misleads them.
That's
now,
right.
I brought that confusion thing up earlier, that the biggest problem to me is that to work right, the voter would have to research not only the candidate they prefer, but also every candidate on the ballot so they could rank their 1 through 5. And then somehow come up with the order of preference. Now, here's what I didn't say. You multiply that by how many races there are.
Right.
Who has the time to do all that?
And that's why people throw up their hands and give up and they don't participate. And that's why the participation in Alaska has dropped dramatically.
Or they just put numbers where they don't belong. You know,
exactly.
If I go in the voting booth and I see a name I never heard of and they're running against another name I never heard of, listen, I just, eeny, meeny, miny, mo, already.
I was going to say that. One other thing I wanted to point out was that this bill should really be illegal. This is a two-part bill, and it actually went to the Supreme Court in Nevada, and unfortunately, they didn't follow the Constitution. The Constitution specifically says each bill has to cover one topic, and they said, oh, well, it's close enough that we're going to allow it. But
all right.
Anyway.
Yes. Well done. 884-9910. Let's go back to the phones. Sean, we're talking ranked choice voting question 3. Sean, good morning. I'm glad you called.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Good morning. So on last Friday, we all listened to Donald Trump. But at the same time, Darren Beatles was out of Boomtown with Ed Solomon. And Ed Solomon has already proven that they use an algorithm in the 2020 election. And it matches, every county matches the same. With the ranked choice voting, that also uses an algorithm. And at that point, we will never be able to prove any sort of fraud.
Yes, that's correct.
It'll be too deep. And the judges, he just said it, the judges don't follow the Constitution. And we can't figure out actually who the rightful winner of the last election was. We kind of know it, but it's not the guy that's making any of these bad decisions. And when they hide that, we're lost. We're a talker country.
Yeah, he's right.
We'll have socialism and communism tomorrow.
Yeah, the only thing I disagree with is that it was really Washoe and Clark County that this guy did the analysis on. The other smaller counties, I don't believe he did an analysis, but because they just didn't have enough votes. I don't want to say they didn't matter, but when you get a big dog like Clark County and a smaller dog like Washoe, they're the ones that are going to make the decision overall for the state of Nevada.
You answered that very well, Joe. Okay, 884-9910. Have just a few more minutes. Okay, I wrote some devil's advocate questions for you guys, okay? Just give quick answers to these, and we'll run through these that I wrote. Wouldn't question 3 give all voters a voice in primary elections and not just those who belong to the big political parties?
Well, in the state of Nevada, we have same-day voter registration. So if you have a particular candidate that you want to vote for, change your voter registration when you're in the voting poll, and then switch back the next day.
Yeah,
for
okay.
the general.
Is that fair though to make somebody jump through hoops because they don't happen to be a member of the party to vote?
For me, being able to identify the value system of a candidate is more important than that particular
right.
topic.
All right. Don't you think it would give voters more choice through ranked voting in the general elections?
I don't.
More choice, more candidates.
But you don't. The five that end up at the top up from the primary going into the general, they may not be your candidate.
Right.
It's just first of all, like the gentleman that just mentioned the algorithms, this system is so complicated, it can't be done manually. You've got, this ranked choice thing. Every iteration has to be done with an algorithm, and it's opaque.
Okay.
You can't follow it.
Let's go to Cynthia calling from South Lake Tahoe on, as she calls it, and you called it too, Joe, jungle voting. Hello, Cynthia. Go ahead. I'm glad you called.
Thank you. Yes. I have been voting this jungle primary every election. And let me tell you, it is atrocious. You end up with all these people. You have no clue who they are. So you are right that you have to research every single name. And there's like 15 of one party. So you have to go through the book and you have to read. Then you have to go to their website. Good old-fashioned voting where you go in, you know who has already run through the primary, you've got the people, it makes it so difficult to vote.
All right, Cynthia.
That's the reason why they do it.
Well said. Got to wrap up here. We're down to our last minute here, guys. What would you ask people to do to find out more? Do you have a website?
No, we don't have a website.
All right, just don't vote. Just vote no on question three.
Vote no on question three. Yeah.
All right, well said.
And tell your friends.
And tell your friends. Okay, well, good luck.
And just vote. Please vote.
Right.
That's a great way to end this. Thank you, Barbara. Thank you, Joe. That's no on question three. I'm John Potter, live and local each and every Saturday, 9 to noon on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. We're still going to take calls on what you want to talk about, 884-9910. Be back after Fox News.